Support for Aspen Public Radio comes from Balcom & Green PC, a full-service law firm with offices in Glenwood Springs, Aspen, and Basalt, providing advice and solutions for their clients' legal needs throughout Western Colorado for more than 60 years. Learn more at balcomgreen.com.
Good afternoon, live from Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bechtesh. This is Valley Roundup. This week, the Lake Christine fire is still burning after flare shots from the Basalt gun range sparked the incident on July 3rd. What's the future for that gun range? Picken County begins to bring affordable housing online in the Mid-Valley, and ballots go out in about 2 months. What and who will Valley voters be voting on? Joining me today are Andre Savail, reporter with the Aspen Daily News, and John Colson, columnist with the Aspen Times. We also invited Jason Auslander, who has not shown up, so we might have a surprise mid-show guests. Thank you both for being here and joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much.
And thank you all for joining me. This is Valley Roundup Live from Aspen Public Radio. All right, Andre, you've been covering the gun range for quite some time, including this latest meeting put on by CPW, which was the first time that they've had that direct, open, public conversation about what the future of this range is going to be. Mm-hmm. I want to start out with some scene setting. You know, there's public officials, members of the public. There's a hired moderator. When you walked into that room, what was the feeling there?
Well, the first thing that struck me when I was walking into the room was how many cops were there? There were tons of cops. I guess Basalt Police and Eagle County Sheriffs and just a lot of, men and women in blue. So I think they were kind of geared up for some confrontational type of situations.
Did they all have Kevlar on?
What's that?
Did they all have Kevlar on? Could you tell?
I mean, they were there as keeping the peace, not as a weighted interest in what was going to happen in the gun range, you're saying?
I think they were there to just ensure that, you know, the crowd would be civil to each other. And there was a lot of concern prior to the meeting that, you know, there would be some confrontations and, you know, some heated comments and who knows what would happen. I mean, it's a very heated issue.
Sure.
You're talking about the fire. You're talking about, you know, guns, and some people think it's about gun rights. So that was just what struck me at the onset of the meeting was, wow, why are there so many cops here?
Wow. Did it stay set up that way, that it was really clear two sides, like a battle, them versus us?
No, and if you read the stories in both papers, you probably got a feel for the fact that the crowd was heavily weighted toward people who want to reopen the range, people who use the gun range. I was actually shocked that there weren't more residents, just typical Basalt homeowners there to say that they didn't want the range to be reopened and that they wanted the range to be relocated. So I don't know why it was stacked so heavily in that way. I think the range has a lot more users than probably a lot of people thought.
Okay.
And I think there were more than 300 people there.
Wow.
So it was a huge turnout. And
I was intrigued by the comments of at least one of the opponents, one of the people who want to close it down, who indicated that there was this silent majority out there who were intimidated against coming to that meeting.
And I would love to hear that a little bit more, because, Andre, as you said, there was a petition, 700, 900 names saying close it down. And yet, as you said, if you go on public comment during this meeting, that is not the sentiment.
The public comment was weighted, I would say, about 80%, you know, for reopening the range and doing it as quickly as possible. John's right. There were some comments that the homeowners feel like they've been intimidated. I don't know how true that is.
Like told not to come?
No, not told not to come, but I think they, from what I understand, they've reached out to the people who use the range to try to find some common ground, I guess, and try to find some consensus. And they feel like no one really wants to listen to them.
Okay.
And when a few of the people representing a homeowners group would speak up at the meeting, there were some boos, there were some hisses, there was some...
Thank you, Donald Trump.
There was some animosity, and I think a large portion of the crowd really... it's hard to say where they all came from. I think they came from all over the valley.
Okay.
I think they were people from Aspen all the way to Rifle or something. And they, I don't know if there was a concerted effort to try to, you know, have bigger numbers there, but they really showed up. And the other side didn't seem to show up. Whether they were intimidated, it's hard to say.
Well, and you know, there is a lot of background here.
Okay.
For decades now, there has been anti-Lake Christine gun range sentiment on the part of a growing number of people who have moved into Basalt and suddenly discovered that not that far from them, there are these loud explosions going on all the time. And it has generated hard feelings, mostly along the lines of people who have been using the range for decades. And those people have expressed their unhappiness about people moving in and saying, no, you got to shut that range down. It hurts my ears. It scares my kids. It scares my dog. Then why did you move here? Is the question that the gun range users ask. And it's this sort of situation has been, it's cropped up before. It cropped up, there's a polo field down near Carbondale.
Yeah.
That has been there and been a polo field for decades. And some doctor from, I think, California bought the land and the land next to it and put in a bunch of houses right next to the polo field. And it wasn't long before the people who moved into those houses and paid the high cost of those houses started saying, wait, there's a funny smell around here. I don't like this smell. Is this from that bunch of horses? Get rid of them. Which didn't work. The Garfield County Board of Commissioners wouldn't even listen. Partially because most of them either are or like to style themselves as down-home Western folk.
Right.
For whom having a horse farm next door is no big whoop.
Right.
And if it smells a little bit, you get used to it. But your dogs will get used to it.
And it's that analogy of what was here first, and if residential areas start consuming something that isn't appropriate in a residential area, who should go then?
Right, just ask the bears.
Exactly. And the fires, honestly. You know, we act, and it was obviously a devastating couple of weeks for those who thought they would lose their homes and some who did. Fires are a natural thing that happen in forests, and we're building these homes closer and closer to forests as well, right? And then we say the forests are ruining the neighborhoods. Well, or the fires are ruining the neighborhoods, and not that just they're burning in a forest. Andre, some stuff I learned from your article was this thought that actually, yes, a fire started at the gun range, If we don't have a gun range, though, that fire is more likely to start in the wilderness. People go use public land for shooting.
Well, I would hope that gun enthusiasts wouldn't be using tracer rounds out in the middle of a forest during stage 2 fire restrictions. I mean, so...
I hope you would also have for
range.
Somebody at Lake Christine gun range.
Right.
Right. And that was what came out of the meeting. I mean, both sides make a lot of good arguments, actually. There was some positive solutions, I guess, that were brought forth by both sides. The you know, CPW and the Forest Service, the officials that were at the meeting, they even make the good point that if we don't reopen the gun range, what's going to happen? People are going to go out into the woods to sight their rifles. It's really more of a safety issue there than reopening the range. And what I'm gathering from just listening to everybody ad nauseum is it seems to me, I mean, there's going to be more meetings on this subject, but it seems to me that CPW, Colorado Parks and Wildlife, is leaning toward reopening the range. And the hunters want it reopened as soon as possible. They got to sight their rifles. They don't want to drive to Glenwood or wherever, or Gypsum or wherever the
I don't know where the next nearest
gun range is. Gun range, I think, is in Gypsum. I think there's one in Rifle. There's supposed to be a good one in Grand Junction. They don't want to go that far. And a lot of the people who spoke up at the meeting were not, you know, what I would call yahoos, I guess, from some, you know, from living in a cabin somewhere who, you know, don't want anyone to tell them what to do as far as where they can sight in their rifles. They were basalt, a lot of them were basalt residents and frying pan residents and people who have lived here for 30, 40 years that say this was a safe place for us to practice, you know, to hold our target practices. And this fire is a result of two idiots. This is what they're saying. Yeah. This is not what I'm saying. Two idiots, two knuckleheads, I think somebody said at the meeting, who, you know, were acting irresponsibly. But what's going to come out of this if they do reopen the range is there's going to be better monitoring. I think everyone agrees that there needs to be better monitoring, an on-site supervisor.
Which they don't have now.
Which they didn't really have
okay. Fully.
I guess they might have had.
CPW agents would show up occasionally.
Okay.
Right.
Mostly it was unsupervised. It was left to the users to supervise themselves.
And Andre, I agree with you. What I'm hearing too is that it seems like it probably will be reopened. There's not a good alternative to move it anywhere. There's not even, it doesn't sound like Colorado Parks and Wildlife is all that convinced that it would need to be moved. They don't have to do what the public says. It's not a vote, right? It's their call.
No, it's not. But the town of Basalt wants to weigh in on it, and I think they're preparing a resolution, which will be discussed. I think
at the next meeting.
Their next meeting is Tuesday night. I don't know how much discussion there will be, but a resolution will be offered, and I think they want to make a statement. I think the town manager and the council and the mayor are looking to make some kind of statement that they would like to see options explored, possible relocation of the range. I don't think they're necessarily opposed to reopening it temporarily if there is a sort of a movement finding another solution.
Well, the Basalt manager is already on record as saying
we should move
leaning toward closure.
It was so different, the two meetings. The Basalt Town Council had a meeting, and the public spoke during that, saying where they said, yes, let's get behind it and draft. We should move the gun range. And then this meeting, where it's the other side, and again, those 900 petitions versus the 300 people who filled this room who are mostly in favor of keeping the gun range. Right at the beginning, you mentioned there might be some gun rights momentum behind this. Are you seeing that at all?
Well, I think the people who are in favor of relocating, closing this range and moving it somewhere else, and, you know, moving it down valley, making it someone else's problem or whatever. I think they brought up the issue of gun rights first because they're afraid that the other side is going to make it about gun rights and that it's a gun rights issue and you want to close the range because you don't want us to, you know, use our guns, you know. They took our guns, you know, that kind of thing.
Exercise our Second Amendment rights.
Sure.
So they came out right away before any of these meetings and said, this is not about gun rights, this is about safety. And that's the message they've been presenting.
Still, I'm really surprised that the NRA hasn't made its thoughts known. Because this is just the kind of issue that they like to get behind on a local level, because, for one thing, it drives up local membership.
Okay.
And for another, it's in line with their historic legislative agenda, which is don't let anybody infringe on what they view as the Second Amendment, correctly or incorrectly. But they're always out there, and I'm really surprised they haven't been here on this one.
Well, they're so well organized. They have such a good, you know, make the call and make people show up, that I think that was a question. I know their name wasn't on it, but the people showing up and in such a good organized fashion to say keep the gun range open, do you know who mobilized that? You don't think there was any sort of gun rights stuff behind it?
I think it's just, you know, there's the group that leases the gun range,
okay.
the Roaring Fork Valley Sportsmen's Association. Mm-hmm. They might, you know, I'm sure they have a list. It would behoove them use that list. I don't know that the NRA was involved in any way, shape, or form, but it wouldn't surprise me if they made some calls. I don't know. But I think, I don't know that it, you know, I think there is that undercurrent of, you know, gun rights, and this is where we've been for 70 years, and if you close the gun range, we can still come out to this property and shoot. That was a clear message that came out of that meeting.
Because it's public land.
Tuesday mm-hmm. night.
Okay.
It's public land.
How interesting.
If you close it down, we're just going to go out in the woods, you know, and that's not as safe as having this range.
Yeah.
So there's good arguments, I mean, on both sides of the issue. But the overwhelming majority at that meeting clearly said, as far as relocation of the range, that dog won't hunt.
To use a shooting metaphor. John, you're one of those people who for decades has been using the Basalt gun range.
Yes.
And of course, know the implications of the fire too, and how much that brought together the community and feared the community. So there is one more meeting coming up on Monday night where CPW will, they're kind of framing it differently, that it's going to go towards solutions instead. But I guess closing out on this, as we go into break, just seeing both sides, where are you sitting on this?
I wrote a column about this a few weeks ago and didn't really take a side then. I think I am ready to now.
Okay.
I think it should be kept open. I think it should be, they should make changes to it. Changes have been suggested already. Of course, the management issue is one that is going to run up against state funding.
Exactly. So but CPW would have to pay that on-site manager.
Well, maybe not necessarily. Okay. The Valley Sportsman might be able to come up with volunteers who will show up and sort of be the presence there. They can be trained by the state to be knowledgeable about the laws, and they can exert influence because they would be talking to their own people.
And that came up in the meeting that there would that a lot of people want to volunteer to be monitors.
And I don't think it's practical to expect the state to build a building around the gun range. I don't think that's ever going to happen. But I think it's possible that they could enclose the targets.
Okay.
Which would prevent bullets from, I mean, unless somebody is just a really lousy shot, it would prevent bullets of any sort from traipsing off into the sky or the woods or somebody out there. And I think safety is a big issue. The Aspen Times editorialized today in favor of keeping it open. And one of the points they made was there was a 60-year-old grandfather who was out in the woods one day and got shot, killed. And one of the first stories that I was aware of when I moved here in 1978 was a story of two guys who were riding dirt bikes in the woods over in the San Juans. And one of them got shot right off his bike. The other guy never even heard the shot.
Oh, my goodness.
and it was just a stray bullet from somebody trying to hit something. So safety is an issue, and you don't want people heading out in big numbers into the backcountry with firearms, because there's a lot of people out there who can get hit.
John Coulson is a columnist with the Aspen Times. I'm also joined by Andre Saville, reporter with the Aspen Daily News. I'm Allison Bechtesh. You are listening to Valley Roundup live on Aspen Public Radio. We know you want to get involved in the conversation, too. You can always email us at news@aspenpublicradio.org. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back, and thanks so much for tuning in to Valley Roundup live here on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bechtesh. Andre Saville, reporter with the Aspen Daily News, sat down with Diane Mitz-Bush, who is running for Congressional District 3 against the incumbent Scott Tipton. You guys had a lot to talk about. One of the things that I think is the biggest question for someone who's been in office since 2011 is, how could a Democrat unseat Tipton? What's her strategy, Andre?
Well, it appears that her strategy maybe to talk about, to hit Tipton directly on some of his votes. She talks a lot about health care. And, of course, that's a problem for everyone, whether you're Republican or Democrat or whatever. So she's hammering away at how Tipton, you know, supported some of the Republican attempts to repeal the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. I don't know how well that's really going to play in the rural conservative parts of the district. What else is she talking about a lot? Tipton, she tries to portray him, like a lot of other Democrats do, as being sort of absent and not in touch with the district. He doesn't have too many town hall meetings.
Huh.
When he had one 2 years ago, I think in Paonia, it didn't go well for him. I remember that. I was with the Telluride Daily Planet at the time,
okay.
And we covered that. And he was pretty well criticized at that meeting. And so he doesn't have a lot of town halls and stuff like that, and you know, they're trying to portray him as out of touch. But Diane has a lot of interesting ideas. She's appears to me to be a kind of a run of the mill, mainstream progressive Democrat. And
yeah, I don't think she's mainstream. I think she is on the progressive side of the.
Yeah,
she's
spectrum.
Talking single payer healthcare.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's the mainstream now.
this is radio, so you don't see the facial expression that just went between John and Andre there. I do want to say, in your article, you wrote that you've extended the same offer to Scott Tipton, that he sit down as long with you as Diane was able to and get his opinion out. Has he responded to that?
In all fairness, you know, that was kind of a quick call that I made to his office. And I think that, you know, if I reach out again, you know, and if he comes to this area, which he does occasionally come to this area. When I was a reporter with the Times, he made a few visits here. That was like 4 or 5 years ago. I don't know how often he's been back.
Well, if he hasn't had to go out and speak to the Roaring Fork Valley to win in the past, why would he now?
And most of those visits have been to select groups. They haven't been general open invitation town halls. He doesn't do that. He doesn't like it.
And CD3 is such an interesting, it's the whole western third of Colorado, like, you know, border to northern to southern border and then left of Colorado. So as Diane pointed out, and I'm sure we all cover all the time, there's a lot of varied interests. You don't really have to win over everyone in order to retain that seat.
And I think, you know, he's not worried about the ski town vote. You know, I mean... He wants Grand Junction. He wants Montrose County.
He wants Pueblo.
Pueblo could be the battleground, but yes, he's got support there, and she has support there, and that, you know, everyone says that's the battleground,
okay.
Pueblo. So they may as well just not campaign in any of the other counties and just, you know, buy a house in Pueblo or...
I think that's a microcosm of the nation as a whole, right? That there's so many disenfranchised voters because you think, I know how my city's going to go. I know how my electoral college is going to go. What's the point of me showing up? And it seems like these select few, even on in a congressional district, can make that call.
Although I think there is a growing awareness that we just saw the downside of that kind of thinking. Why bother showing up? Because I know my electoral college vote is going to go for the other guy. That's not always the case. Colorado is one of the few states that did not go for Trump, even though he thought it was Trump country. And most other people in this state thought it was Trump country, too. It surprised a lot of people that we went for Hillary.
Well, I think, you know, everyone says Colorado, is, on the whole, is a purple state.
Sure.
And but CD3 is really red, and I would be really shocked if Diane pulled this off. She's lagging behind in terms of fundraising, according to the last report. He had four times as much cash on hand as she did, and she's a dynamic candidate, and I think she might be one of the better candidates that the Democratic Party has put up against Tipton over the last, what is it, since 2011, since he first was elected in 2010. But right now, I like to handicap political races, kind of like horse races.
Okay.
So if you'll
and
allow
then we can
me
start
that,
betting on them. Why not? Yeah, that's allowed.
Yeah, let's make some wagers. I'd put Tipton at 4-5, and I'd put Diane at 10-1. And
ooh,
I think,
that's harsh.
Yeah,
it's not harsh. It's the reality of the district, I think. And, you know, I think she's got a shot. She's going to have to raise some more money. I mean, the reality is it's money and it's advertising and it's not just having great ideas and a progressive agenda that would work for the district. It's about money.
Well, actually, what's her name? Octavia Cortez? The woman who won in Brooklyn?
Yeah.
She just proved that money isn't the end-all, be-all. She overturned a guy who everybody thought was going to win re-election.
Mm-hmm.
And she just organized like crazy, knocked on doors like crazy, didn't spend a lot of money, and she got the prize.
But that's a small geographic district. The CD3 in Colorado is huge. It's just insane. You have so much ground to cover. And there's just, I mean, I before I moved back to Aspen this year, I was living down in Southwest Colorado. And, you know, it's just so vast. And how do you hit that town, you know?
You do a lot of driving.
Six times during the campaign. It's just ridiculous. So, you know, I didn't mean to be harsh about saying she's 10-1, you know. You know, she could pull a big stretch run. I mean, a 10-1 Philly.
To continue the horse racing.
A 10-1 Philly or a 10-1 colt often wins the race. So we'll just have to see what happens.
And just like that, we are out of time. You've been listening to Valley Roundup Live on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bechtesh. Thanks so much to Andre Svail, reporter with the Aspen Daily News, and John Colson, columnist with the Aspen Times. Valley Roundup is a production of Aspen Public Radio News. You can catch this online later today, aspenpublicradio.org.
This is Aspen Public Radio, broadcasting on KAJX Aspen and KCJX Carbondale.
Thank you.